proud to present Beer Radio that turns ordinary homebrew, into award-winning beer. The Jameel Show. And now, your hosts, Jameel Zainashef and John Plisse.
Good evening, my brewing brothers and sisters.
Hallelujah. Hallelujah.
Feels like a month since we were here last.
It was a month.
Oh, okay.
I missed you.
I missed you too, Joe.
We have a special guest here today.
Yeah, and it's not, you know, we normally don't allow anybody to come in here. We really don't. We don't want visitors,
no,
guests.
There's still nobody here.
But, you know, Mike McDowell. My good buddy and John's good buddy and one of the finest brewers we know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Jameel, come on.
Is here.
Hi, everybody.
Award-winning brewer. He's here with us.
Great.
Long shot finalist.
Yeah, his beer is out of... he's got a 50-50 chance of being in the long shot six-pack, if it was just random chance. But,
right.
Of course, he's going to be in that six-pack.
Big
year.
Smiley face.
That would be great. Yeah. I hope if they make my beer, they make it close to my beer, you guys are all going to love it.
Okay? Yeah.
You hopheads will anyway.
Yeah, he's got a double IPA in the long shot competition.
We should buy a pallet of it if he wins it.
Oh, yeah.
56
Absolutely.
Cases.
Or maybe he could just make us a couple of kegs.
Yeah.
Oh, that too.
That would be even better.
Could you just brew it for us?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, Mike, brew me some beer.
Well, we're here with the 2007 Ninkasi Award recipient. Jameel Zainashef,
yes.
Well done.
Thank you.
Good work.
I won, and I got a whole bunch of prizes, too.
And like what?
And I got, like, you know, conical fermenter from More Beer. I got a wood barrel from White Labs. Also from White Labs, look at this, a heroin spoon from White Labs. It says White Labs.
Did you really get
a
spoon?
Is that for Black and Tans? Is that the deal?
Yes.
They gave you a Black and Tan spoon.
I think it's more like a Coke spoon. Isn't it?
It's a Black and Tan spoon?
Wow.
Well, then I need to clean the heroin
What's
residue out of
you,
it.
What's wrong with you, man?
They give you a Bic lighter to go with that?
Yeah.
Bic lighter. A little burner.
Yeah,
those little torches.
Yeah, I thought it was for heroin.
Yeah. No.
No?
No.
What's it for? For Black and Tans?
Yeah, Black and Tans.
Yeah. Oh, whoa, whoa, whoa. Okay. Yeah, yeah. I'll clean that up and use it for Black and Tans.
McDowell's got a lighter. Wait, hold on a second.
Yeah,
we'll just shoot up.
Okay. I thought it was an unusual gift to get.
Yeah.
Because I also got a mirror, and I knew what that was for.
They just didn't give you the blade.
Right. Your own resume.
Right, right.
Wow.
So, you know, I assume the spoon.
See, now that's worth it. Win Ninkasi, get drug paraphernalia. You're good.
Exactly. Yeah. That was the first thing that came to my mind, of course.
Right.
But, you know. It was great. If you've never been, and neither of you guys were there this year.
I know.
Yeah, we couldn't be there.
It's really kind of disappointing.
Where were you, Mike? You were...
Well, I had to go to a wedding, but I've been like the last 4 years. I just, you know, couldn't go this time.
Yeah.
Next year, Cincinnati.
Yeah, I'll be there.
I'll be there.
I already booked my room.
So did I.
Already?
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm not screwing around. I'm not missing this.
Yeah, it's available, so everybody's going to be signing up. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, sign up right away. Get your tail to Cincinnati.
Yeah.
It's June 19th, I think is when it starts.
Okay.
I think... Isn't that the date?
So is that about that time, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And we posted on the forum, so you can see what the dates are and all the contact information. And you didn't do too shabby at the NHC either.
Yeah, hey, I'm just glad I placed.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, and you've placed every year that you've entered. Isn't that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
That is quite an accomplishment
there. It certainly is.
They're all different beers, too, which was good, too. Never the same beer.
Yeah, it's nice to place with different ones. Because then, yeah, if you're always placing with the same one, then it's kind of like, well, you know, you got one like good beer.
Yeah,
but if
like
you're
my fruit beer.
fruit beer.
Like, but a fruit beer win twice.
2 years earlier.
But if you're winning with all sorts of different beers, then you can chalk it up to just like, well, you know, there's a lot of good beers in there.
Yeah.
You know? Cool.
Drink.
Okay. So, yeah, what we're talking about tonight is... IPAs. And one of the reasons we got Mike here is because he brews great IPAs. Double IPAs, regular IPAs. He brews a lot of great beer.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he's quite understandably proud of his IPA.
And his hop schedule and how he hops his beers is very unique.
Is it? Well, we're going to find out.
We're going to find out. We're going to later. So.
Nothing too special.
Yeah.
Introduce hops at every possible moment. Maybe that's my deal.
That's what we need to share, Mike. Yeah.
Okay, so we got a lot to cover this show.
Yeah, we do.
So I say we jump right in because people are going to have a lot of questions for Mike.
Oh, God.
And it's one of the rare opportunities that we get Mike in the studio.
A little McDonald's presence.
You want to cover...
I like his vibe, too, by the way. It's like, I'm just so relaxed when I'm around McDowell. He's just hanging out, you know?
He's no more relaxed than I am, believe me.
Okay.
It's all about medication.
Right.
You want to cover... tell us about IPA.
Well, American IPA is very popular. It's definitely a West Coast beer. The aroma of this beer is very intense with hop aroma. The aromatics should be of citrus, somewhat perfumey, little resin coming through, maybe some piney or grapefruit. Some people say danky too, maybe some from the use of Columbus hops. Also, you can get maybe a grassy aroma from possible dry hopping. With American IPAs, you definitely want to use American style hops, and we'll go over those later. Also, in the aromatics, you probably get some esters and some alcohol maybe from alcohol because it's a high alcohol beer, about 6% or more. Visually, the color is about medium gold to medium copper, maybe some orange hue coming through. And as far as the flavor, definitely hops coming through. Medium to high bitterness, medium to high hop flavor. I mean, I think we should definitely talk about the difference between bitterness and hop flavor, you know, later on. Strong malt backbone to balance out the high use of hops. Definitely should be balanced too. You don't want it to be too just over the top, just hop liquid. You definitely want a good malt backbone. There's definitely some toastiness maybe coming through, caramel flavors. And overall, it's just a over the top pale ale, hoppy, bitter, balanced with just some good old malty goodness. So
now what's your? I'm just assuming here you've had a really good IPA that you really love. Give me a commercial example of a great IPA.
Russian River's standard IPA.
Yeah?
The Blind Pig, too, is great. So, Blind Pig, I think, is almost blonde in color. It's not even... It's a lighter color than I'm used to. I'm usually used to a copper color.
Well, and that's one of the things. It's similar to how Pliny's done, where, it doesn't have a lot of... color malts in it, character malts in it, the crystals and all that, and it's a drier, crisper finish. You could have that same range in IPAs. I think the style guides, I think it's accurate, but I think I'm tending to see a few more in the lighter color range more recently, and I think that's just to keep them more drinkable, in large quantities.
Is that to dry it out more?
That's what the commercial guys are doing. They're drying them out. That's what they say the IPA drinkers want, is just a pure hoppy beer and forget about the malty back in.
Well, and I used to think, more malty to balance the more bitterness and hoppy. And that can work up to a point. And I think once you get to a certain amount of hopping, if you put enough malt to balance that, it's too much.
It's just too malty.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, what about you, Mike? What's one of your favorite commercial IPAs out there?
Well, I drink locally, so I like Drake's, Lagunitas.
That's a great one, yeah.
And
The Drake's always places in a lot of places in a lot of competitions. Drake's IPA.
Right. It's a very tasty beer. That's why it does. Yeah.
And they're consistent too, which always blows me away. I mean, if you have a lot of hops in a beer, to keep them the same or somewhat the same throughout each year,
right?
I mean, that's pretty impressive.
That's very tricky because it's a component of the beer that changes year to year, depending on how much rain they get and how the growing season, a lot of processing on the hops, and they try and keep it pretty consistent, but that's a variable ingredient in the beer, and keeping your beer consistent is very difficult. But
what about you?
As a matter of fact, one of the most recent IPAs I drank was an Avery IPA. Actually, of the many things Justin left behind in the motorhome, one happened to be a bottle of Avery IPA.
Good man.
So clearly he missed it on his way out. Otherwise, it would not have been there.
Yeah, purely accidental.
Accidental. I know. Yeah, I'm thinking guy could leave a couple of bottles behind. I did bring beer on the way out. He could leave a few on the way back. Oh, right. But no.
Mixed up with the dirty underwear he left, too. Yeah.
I took mine and yours. I think I have your NHC beer here.
Yeah, see, so...
Wow.
So I'm spending the day cleaning other residues, like out of the bathroom,
bedroom.
Yeah, you know, tissues stuck all over the place.
Ugh.
And... You know, so I helped myself to that beer, and I'll tell you, that Avery beer was really good. I was very surprised. You know, it went through a lot of abuse, on the trip back, and it got pretty warm before I finally chilled it down and drank it. And it was one of those ones with the lighter body. It's very, you know, almost a bit more lighter gold or blonde in color. And I thought it was really good, real refreshing, great hop character. I enjoyed that one a bunch. So there's a lot of good IPAs. The ones I don't care for are a lot of brew pubs and a lot of homebrewers will do is they make it really sweet. There's a lot of sweetness, residual sweetness to it. I like a malt character, but I don't like too much sweetness. And the sweetness tends to get too cloying or candy-like a lot of times.
Does that take away from the hop bitterness,
I think a lot of times they're doing it to balance that hop bitterness.
Oh, okay.
They just don't get it quite right.
Yeah, I think, it, you know, too much residual sweetness, nah, it's cloying.
Right.
You know, you can balance it to a point, but past that, it's too much.
Hmm. How were the homebrewers IPAs out in NHC? Did you try any, or was there any, or?
I'm trying to think of who I tried. You know, actually, one of the... I've tried a number of clones of Denny's Rye IPA, and a number of them haven't been very good.
Yeah.
Well, this one guy, Jesse, he brought a clone of Denny's Rye IPA, and it was actually probably the best one I've ever had. And I thought, after drinking, I'm like, oh, this is nice. This is a good drinkable IPA, and you know, with a little rye character to it. I imagine that's what, you know, Denny's, you know, Rye IPA should be. And I thought that was really good.
Hmm.
All right, so we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll dive into the recipe for Mike's award-winning IPA.
This year, the Great American Beer Festival will last for 3 days, have more than 40,000 visitors, more than 380 breweries, more than 1,600 beers, but only one lucky listener will be going for free. Beer, Beer, and More Beer, the Brewers Association, White Labs, and the Brewing Network are sending you on the beer trip of the year. Airfare, hotel, all festival sessions for free. Brought to you by the Brewers Association, White Labs, Beer, Beer, and More Beer, and the BN. Visit thebrewingnetwork.com for more details.
This is The Jameel Show.
Now, see, Mike, you get to sit next to John and be annoyed by his antics coming back from break.
Yeah. He's got a drum set at his house. I get to rock out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's furniture, but...
Okay. Next is furniture.
Furniture, you can't, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, we're talking about IPAs. So I get my buddy here, Mike McDowell, and John Plisse, and we are going to go over Mike's award-winning IPA recipe. Mike brews a hell of an IPA. We're enjoying some right now. And let's see, for 12 U.S. gallons, and I apologize to our international listeners, I got this recipe from Mike, and I did not do all the conversions for metric. So you're just going to have to gut it through and calculate on your own this time. Sorry about that.
A good website is onlineconversion.com.
Online, yeah. Well, and you can do it in the Google field, too. That's normally, you just type in, you know, FNC, and it gives you... all right, so for 12 U.S. gallons, your anticipated original gravity is 1066, or about 16 Plato. And your SRM is going to be about 14, about 80 IBUs. at a efficiency of 65%. You're going to be boiling this for 90 minutes total. We're going with 28 pounds of American two-row, 2 pounds of a caramel pills malt, 2 pounds of Crystal 60, 1 pound Crystal 120, and 1 pound of Munich for the malt bill. Now, I find that interesting because you know, that's a lot of Crystal 120. That's a lot of Crystal 60 for you know, a beer of the IPA style. We're talking how some of the beers that people are doing nowadays, they're, you know, a lighter, you know, crisper thing. This is on the other end. This is going the darker.
Yeah, I'm operating at the other end of the deal. Sure. Yeah, that Crystal 120 adds a whole the beers that we're drinking it now. It's a, really a bright red. It's a little bit even beyond what the Staudine says about what copper.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely more red than copper for sure.
And why are you doing that? It's,
well,
not...
I'm trying to basically do a clone of Sierra Nevada mm-hmm. Celebration Ale, which is a big red Christmas beer.
Right. And so besides the red color, though, you're going for what kind of flavor with that Crystal 120 and that Crystal 60?
Well, I'm hopping it up pretty well, so I want some residual, you know, maltiness to mm-hmm. to be there for the big hops.
That caramelly right. sweetness sure. that you're getting from the 60 and the 120. I always find that gives me some sort of, you know, kind of like a slightly burnt caramel and a raisiny type of note to things.
Doesn't seem to come through with this beer. I don't know whether it's the bigger malt bill, the more mm-hmm. base malt mm-hmm. or what, but I don't get that. It just seems like it just, to me, it's just I'm adding the red color when I add that.
Right. Well, and this, I think, you know, can handle some of it. I think you're, you know, close to the limit on it. I certainly wouldn't double it or anything like that.
Yeah, anybody making this beer, they may consider not even putting that in there just because they get it back mm-hmm. to the nice light-colored beers, which everybody seems to want to make now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so there's an option for you.
Yeah, or
you
use less. I mean, if you want to,
right?
Because dark grains, and I consider that a fairly dark grain. Mm-hmm. Depends on your process. I mean, my system, a little bit seems to go a long way because I recirculate my mash.
Right.
And so any sort of color grains that I add into the mix, it gets the full effect of those.
Right.
How long do you recirculate for?
For the whole mash. So, you know, 30-minute rest, 15-minute ramp-up to sparge. It's all recirculating the whole time.
So, and actually, I guess that's, you know, it's a pound, but this is a 12-gallon batch. So that's really under 3%. Of the total grist for that 120. So that's not too bad.
Yeah.
I think, let me give the percentages here. So that'll be easier for people who are trying to convert and set up the recipe. So 82.4% is the American pale malt, 5.9% of Carapils, 5.9% of Crystal 60, 2.9% of Crystal 120, and 2.9% of Munich malt. Now, the Munich malt, I assume you're also doing for a malty background?
Yeah, a little melanoidin going on there, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
A little complexity, yeah.
And you're doing all this to balance out the hops, or?
Well, I don't know. It's just a malt that I like to use to give it the beer a little more interesting background.
It's interesting. Drinking this beer, I taste the Crystal 120, some of the crystals coming through, rounded out by the malty bitterness. And then it just kind of goes away. It's like a smooth finish. There's no, like, bitterness lingering anymore.
I think one of the hallmarks of Mike's beers are that, one, they're clean, mm-hmm. and two, that, you know, they have a nice finish to them. Mm-hmm. They're never cloying. They're never harsh. They're never, you know, lots of residual whatever. It's a beer you can drink. Any beer Mike makes is a beer you can drink in quantity.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes too much.
Yeah. Well, you know, I get here and I'm like, Mike, you bring beer? Don't bother saying hello. It's like, you bring beer?
Thirsty.
Pour me beer.
Yeah.
Give me beer, Mike. Give me beer.
Selfish. No.
That's me.
Yes. And of course, I did bring beer.
Yes, you did.
Yeah. Oh, and at first he says no. And I'm just like,
let's get a little sound effects here.
Don't cool. shake up those,
sorry,
those beers.
Sorry, diving in the cooler.
All right, so what kind of mash temp do you do on that grain bill there?
Well, I do like to do it at 153. Might let it kick up to 154.
Mm-hmm.
I love the mouthfeel associated with that sort of mashing, and mm-hmm. Willing to take a little bit hit on the terminal gravity, but I hop it to anticipate a little bit more maltiness in the finish.
And for hops, you've got here interesting hop run here. We've got an ounce and a half of Chinook hops, pellets, at 11% alpha acid as a mash hop.
Is that a whole hop, Mike?
Or
pellets. Pellet hops, yeah. Sorry.
Okay. As a mash hop. So he's adding that to his grains and to the entire mash. Do you scatter those on the top, or do you mix them in with your grains?
I just mix them in with the grain before I dough in, you know, just sort of hydrate it all at the same time.
Wow.
And what do you find you get from that mash hop?
Yeah. Well, Jamil, you know, it's sort of a Zen thing here. I don't know what I'm getting. It's probably like, there's probably some spirits that need to be driven out with the come in the grain or something. I don't know. It adds, to me, probably like a softer bitterness that I'm hoping will like persist through the boil somehow. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe it probably doesn't, but it's sort of a something I like to do. So it calculates out to the. Sometimes in other beers, I'll add it all into the 60 minute. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, beer that I'm looking for an overall multi layered, hops at every level sort of effect. I figure, well, there's a level I can put in, free of charge.
Do you wave any other hops around or add some to the burner or anything?
No. I just brew without pants. That's,
there
of course,
go.
Everybody's doing that.
Well, and see, and what I do is. I have one of those little goats that's on the Eyinger Celebrator bottle.
Oh, yeah, we're listening.
This
is one of those secrets. Okay.
I hang that on my mash tun.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
You told me this before.
Yeah, I did.
But this time I'm remembering for some reason.
This is the secret. This is the one thing I've kept secret. I'm finally opening the kimono right here, baby. Well,
that's what I'm thinking. I'm going to get one of those right
this
away.
This is the little goat
the
on
little
the bottle.
Little plastic goat off the bottle, yeah.
Yeah. Hang that on the mash tun.
Wow.
That's
your lucky charm.
That's it. I've given it all.
Now I know what to steal.
You told us it was
really
in
totally
the ferment, too,
myself.
But it's really in
Yeah,
the,
I've been
the,
lying
the
all this time.
Yeah.
It's the plastic goat.
The plastic goat. Cool.
I tell you, it works for Eyinger.
It works for you.
Can't go wrong. Works for me. All right, so let's see. We got an ounce of Chinook pellets, again, at 11% alpha at 60 minutes. We've got 4 ounces of Centennial pellets at 9.9% alpha for 15 minutes. 4 ounces Cascade Whole at 6.7% alpha for 5 minutes. And then 4 ounces of Cascade Whole at 6.7% alpha in a hop back. So
what's a hop back?
why don't you go over the hop back for us, Mike?
Well, a hop back is essentially it's a small canister. I'm doing, like Jamil says, a 12-gallon batch here. So my equipment's sort of for 10 gallons. So I'm using about a quart and a half stainless steel container, and it's got like a false bottom like you would see in most brewing equipment that has a false bottom. And I stuff a hop sack full of hops into that, and then the hot wort runs through that right ahead of the counterflow chiller. So the last thing the wort sees before it hits the chiller is this bed of hops.
So you're locking in, when it cools rapidly right after that, you're locking in that hop resins and flavors and the oils and volatile organics of the hops into the wort.
Right, that's the idea.
Cool. All right, so you got that in the hop back, 4 ounces of the whole in the hop back.
We're halfway there.
Yeah, we're nearing the end.
Well, there's more hops.
More hops.
Wait. Wait. The rest are dry hopping. So when do you dry hop your beer?
Well, after the first week of fermentation, sometimes an extra day depending on how much it's going. When it's bubbling about every 10 to 15 seconds, I'm thinking, okay, that's a good time to put that in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll add it all at one time.
You add them loose, or do you add them in a sack?
I add them
in
hop sacks, sacks, weighted hop sack. Don't let them sit on top. That's asking for trouble.
Why is that?
Well, you're introducing oxygen when you obviously the bag of hops you're putting in there, as sterile as it is, there's oxygen included in the bag, and then, of course, in the hops themselves, right? So let's get that out of the bottom. At least that's, out of the, where the when oxygen meeting that croison that might still be on there.
Hmm. Okay.
And then I every what I do differently is maybe not so differently, but every 2 days I rouse the fermenter.
It's how you rouse it.
Yeah, how you
takes
rouse
his pants
it
off, takes the Viagra.
Now is, pants are still off.
Is this still on the gross yeast? With all
the yeast? I'm using I'm in a conical, right? So I'm using it as a unitank. I don't go to a secondary.
Oh. Do you drop the yeast before you dry hop?
No.
Okay.
No.
So it's on the
I don't
yeast
drop
bed
the yeast. No. Hmm. No.
And technically, it's still fermenting. If you're going 15 seconds between bumps, it's still fermenting and in the primary.
Right. And I want it to be fermenting because I'm introducing oxygen. I want that to get scrubbed out.
Okay.
Yeah, a lot of people like to dry hop way late in the process, even in the bright tank, in the keg, after they rack the beer and they're drinking it. They want the dry hop to be in there. I'm not too crazy about that, especially with hoppy beers, because they oxidize so easily.
Well, I think one of the theories on that is they don't want any of the CO2 scrubbing away into the aromatics of the hops.
Right.
Well, but then, toss in more hops.
Exactly. It's a recipe.
You can fix that. More hops.
Right. More hops. And this has got, even once you list the quantities there, you'll see that there's plenty of hops there.
Right. So for dry hopping, Mike's got 2 ounces of Cascade pellets, 2 ounces of Centennial pellets, and 2 ounces of Chinook pellets. And it really doesn't matter what the alpha acid of those is. Some people say, the alpha acid is also related to the volatile oils that are in there. So, the higher the alpha acid, the higher the oil levels, and so you want to adjust your dry hops that way. I've never found that to be true, but people swear by that. So if you believe that and that's the case for you, 6.7 on the Cascades alpha acid and 9.9 on the Centennial and 11% on the Chinooks, all dry hopped. So Mike adds them. He waits until the bubbles are slowing down and like 4 bubbles a minute maybe, and then adds his dry hops in a sack. He sacks up on his hops and
submerge.
Puts a big nut in there.
Yeah, stainless.
A lot of stainless steel parts.
And drops his sack in the
submerged
into the conical there to submerge his sack in the beer.
Wait a minute.
Stainless.
And
I can't reach that conical. I tried.
The nuts take it down to the bottom.
And then
he lets that sit for how long do you let your sack sit in the
till I'm done.
Till he's done.
Till the dry hop's complete.
Till it feels right?
Yeah. Right.
Do you taste it?
Yeah.
Do you taste it on a regular
basis? You're getting into my secrets here.
do you taste it to see when it's time to pull your sack out of the
dry hop? Wait till the goat smiles at me. That's why.
It's all about the goat smiling back.
Awesome. How long do you dry hop?
Well, depends on the beer. If it's like a 17 Plato beer, I'll about 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's just a pale ale, probably just 1 week.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you find that adding your dry hops earlier on in the fermentation is kind of like protects you possibly from wild yeast that are on your hops? I mean, you still have active fermentation going on.
Yeah, that's why I add it while there's still some bubbling going on, so that it sort of scrubs out the oxygen and obviously some of the aroma gets consumed by the yeast, but like Jamil says, that's taken care of in the recipe.
Right.
Yeah, I used to put my hops in a sack and put a nut in there and sink it for dry hopping. And then I had trouble getting the sack out of the sack out of there, I stopped using the sack and I started going commando and
commando.
The hops go right in there and you have a concern about the hops on the surface and all that, and I think with whole
probably
hops,
like a yeast reissue, reusing the yeast kind of thing. Sometimes I will be pitching back on top of that. So I want to be able to remove at least the bulk of that vegetative matter.
Well, on the whole hops, I bet you this is much more of an issue. If you were to toss whole hops in there, they don't break up. The pellets do tend to break up into little bits and sink eventually. So that might be somewhat helpful.
See, I thought that with dry hopping, contact with the hops is a real issue. Like, you want as much contact as possible. So I would have thought that your method of just throwing them in without the sack is possibly more effective because they're dispersing all through the wort, right, instead of just being in the little...
Well, here's the thing. If you're going to go with a sack, you're going to need a big sack. and you're going to have a lot of hops in that sack. It's going to be a big bulging sack that you're going to put in there.
Yeah, make sure you use a big
sack. You're going to have to use more.
Hop swell, so.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right. You don't want your sack to burst either.
So you would actually, Jamil, would actually use less hops because you don't use
sack.
Yeah. Then
I got no sack.
McDowell
yeah, you're
does.
Into the area where your process has a lot to do with the beer you make. It's the same thing, like you give the same people the same recipe, they don't make the same beer because the process is different.
And then, Jamil, would you then have to do a secondary because you just let the hop matter all into the wort, whereas, McDowell's kind of pulling a lot of it right back out?
I do rouse the fermenter, so I am sort of like maybe compensating for the fact that I had it all in the sack.
Yeah, he's not dropping his yeast or anything, so he's not doing any management of that as well. So I would do, here's the thing for me. I would not worry about, for me, I would not reuse that yeast because if I'm doing it, well, it depends. If you're doing a lighter gravity beer, maybe. But when I get past a certain IBU, if I get to 80 IBUs, I'm not going to reuse that yeast because the hop resins will coat the outsides of the yeast cells.
Oh, yeah.
And make it very difficult for them to reproduce. It reduces viability. This is the same way, when people go, oh, you add hops and it protects against bacterial and spoilage and all that. It does the same thing to bacteria that it does to yeast. It coats the outside of the cell, the resins do, and it makes it hard for it to get nutrients and reproduce and all this. And that's how it prevents the bacteria from spreading. Well, same thing happens to the yeast. So the yeast isn't really that great for reusing. If you want to read some interesting research, look for debittering yeast. And they have a process for actually stripping the hop resins off of the yeast cells in order to restore viability of the yeast. And I thought it was fascinating that they do this, but that's one of the reasons. Once I get up into this IBU range, I'm not reusing the yeast anyways. I don't do secondary anyways, and 3 weeks on the yeast is not a big deal, so I just toss it in, and then I take the beer out, and then I'm done.
I guess, because I know you don't do secondary, that's kind of what I meant, though. Even just having all of that hop matter in the beer is kind of what I was thinking about, that you have a lot more hop matter in your beer if you're not using the sack than McDowell does.
Right.
So do you have to then, do another clarifying step before you're serving it?
No, because the hop bits are fairly big compared to things like yeast.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's, they either settle or they'll still be floating on the surface, whatever. You just draw the beer out from in between.
Okay.
And, you might get a hop flake or two in there, but it's
that's
good
body.
For you. Roughage.
Yeah, good.
Helps keep you regular.
All right, when we come back, we'll get into the process. All right.
In fermentation,
there you go.
This fall, the most anticipated book in home brewing will be available from just one place.
You can get it in a lot of places.
Well, the most anticipated book in home brewing will be available for pre-order from only one place.
That's not true either.
All right, smarty pants, but only one place will have it signed.
Oh, that's cool.
TheBrewingNetwork.com offers brewing classic styles by Jamil Zainashev, the most awarded homebrewer in history, and homebrewing expert John Palmer. Available now for pre-order from the Brewing Network store, signed by Jamil himself.
It's every BJCP style. Every recipe is extract and all grain. Every single one has won awards. Every style has some tips on how you brew the beer, what to focus on, what the key parts are of brewing an excellent version of the style.
Available this fall, Brewing Classic Styles. Pre-order your copy today. Visit thebrewingnetwork.com for more details.
Did you know that you can not only order from More Beer online at morebeer.com and receive free shipping on most orders over $59, but you can also shop in person at their two retail locations located in Concord and Riverside, California. In fact, the Concord facility has grown to over 15,000 square feet to fit all the new products, expanded showroom, and new Knowledge Center classroom. And now, in conjunction with the Brewing Network, More Beer is making it easier than ever to keep up on what's happening. Download the More Beer Monthly Podcast by clicking Podcast at morebeer.com. You'll learn about More Beer's history, sales and discounts on More Beer products, get to know team members, and hear ways to save you money. They're also launching a brand new website soon with more features and a better online shopping experience. So go to morebeer.com or call 800-600-0033. That's 800-600-0033. Now, back to the Jameel Show.
I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. So good.
All right, we're back. We're here talking IPAs with brewing legend Mike McDowell.
Oh, now we're drinking way too much now.
Can I get some McDowell, please?
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
Oh, beer.
Yeah, speaking of which, yeah. Oh, wait a minute.
And I'm out of beer.
Yeah, brewing legend. See, that gets you your glass full. You gotta say something like that.
Yeah.
Butter me up.
Give them the old asshole treatment.
Yeah.
All right. So we covered the hopping. We covered the mash. Covered the specs on this. And the yeast you're using is WLP 001 California Ale Yeast. Have you ever tried the Y Yeast 1056 as well, or the Safale US 05?
No, I have not. No.
Always with the California Ale Yeast.
Well, yeah, I like
good
to keep...
Good product.
I have
yeah.
Basically two yeasts I use, is the 001 and the 833, and of course with the lagers. And
mm-hmm.
Once in a while, of course, my Belgians, I do something different, but just a yeast I've known to grow and love, the 001, so I just deal with it.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of that clean California American ale yeast.
Yeah.
Really does a great job on a wide variety of beers. I use it in the Scottish ales as well, and I'll use it in just about everything. I use it in the Flanders to start with.
Really?
And then I pitch my bugs.
Right.
I need to get your Flanders recipe too later.
I tell you, that Flanders, oh, I love that. Love that stuff.
Oh, God.
That is so great. And so what so I guess we're done.
I guess we're done. Drink more beer.
Well, right. We needed some of that Flanders. Oh, right, this idea.
So what do you ferment at? What's your fermentation process?
Well, a beer like this, I like to ferment about 68, maybe 69. Mm-hmm. I don't let it get too much higher.
You like the 69?
Yeah. I love 69.
It works.
And sometimes at the end, you know, when it gets to be the last couple of days, I might bump it up to 73, 74 just to make sure there's nothing left in it.
Mm-hmm.
But feel safe because all you know, all the ester production, all the possible ester production's over. So I don't care, mind a higher finishing temperature like that.
I'm with you. I like to start a little cooler, and then once you get past a certain point, you know, there's really nothing to worry about. I mean, you're pretty much already locked in everything that you're going to do. Yeah, there's some limits to it, but you can jack it up a few degrees and really not ruin the beer.
I just realized why you agree with me, because I probably learned it from you.
It's
like, well, that's, you know.
That's true.
I mean, that's probably it.
Right? Well, Mike and I share a lot of information. Yeah. We don't share it with you, John, because we're afraid of you in competition already.
Yeah.
We don't want to give you any advantage over us.
That's right.
The last few things that us
damn
old
it.
Todgers have is our secrets. Now that I've given you the goat thing, I think I'm pretty much screwed. But
go buy a goat.
Mike's holding on to a few of them.
And Mike, when you ferment, you're pitching cold, I take it, 65,
yeah.
66?
Yeah, like a good pitching temperature, like 3 degrees before where I want to be fermenting.
And you're holding it for 2 weeks at 67, 68? Just,
yeah.
And then do you think you're doing a diastole rest when you're ramping it up to 72, 74?
Well,
or are you just trying to get more kick out of it?
Well, I'm just trying to like make sure that it's completely finished, actually, as far as it'll go.
Now,
but I mean, that's not that low. But believe me, my beer, what is this, like a 1068 beer or something like that?
Yeah, 1066.
It's probably finished like at 1017, 1018.
Do you actually notice a gravity drop in that last 3-4 days? Or I mean, are you looking at it?
No.
You just do it for insurance?
An old wise man said, you know, if you've got a big beer, just let it ferment out a little, an extra week or whatever.
Okay. But it's a total 3-week ferment.
For a big beer like this, right. Yeah. Like
well, including the dry hopping and all that
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, yeah, it takes a while. Okay. Then, like, you know, a beer like the a Pliny that I make, which, or double IPA, I'll say, it's probably like a Pliny, might take 4 weeks for that beer to come out.
Now, are you, I'll tell you, you know, the Pliny that I made was really good, which bested Mike's Pliny at the Mayfair.
Ooh, and that one hurts, yeah.
I actually called up Mike.
Was that my recipe? It wasn't my recipe.
Well, yeah, it's kind of like Vinny's recipe.
Everybody's just kind of like Vinny's.
But I called up Mike, and I was like, Mike, okay, so I need to do the, you know, what's my next step?
Yeah. Go to, I'm going to call me about the dry hop or something, yeah.
Mike, you just gave away the bird.
Give him his advice, yeah. Well, that one didn't win. It was actually traditional Bock that won.
Okay.
And then the Scottish Shady, or We Heavy, or something like that?
Yeah,
that
was
and then it was
show.
And then it was Mike's beer.
So I was like third runner-up.
The Imperial didn't play into it. But, you know, I'll tell you,
I'd won Best
beer.
Of Show the prior 2 years in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And Jamil hadn't entered. Then he enters. He gets Best of Show, runner-up Best of Show, and I get second runner-up Best of Show. Now, clearly, if he hadn't entered, I'd have won my third in a row.
Triple bird.
Bird Best of Show.
But no. Jamil needed his triple bird.
No, he was afraid that he was...
I had to stick it to my buddy here.
He'd already won two birds. And he wanted to get his third before I got my third.
Well, because you were mentioning it, then Drew like starts needling me in the email.
Drew has to take a lot of the blame. Yeah, because he was egging you on. Yeah.
You're not going to let him do this, are you?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, okay, see, I'll screw with him.
He was creating controversy. It's like WWF of home brewing. Kind of
that's
thing.
Right.
Yeah. It's amazing how big home brewing can be. Like, you know.
Yeah, we don't get too exciting. So
yeah,
we have
not
to,
at
like,
all.
Pump it up when we can.
Sweaty palms at the dinner. You know.
All right, so what were we talking about? We're talking about
fermentation.
Fermentation, temperature, okay.
Yeast strain, we did.
One, yeast pitch size, is that, did I talk about that?
Right, no. Well, what about yeast? How much do you pitch? Do you do oxygen, no oxygen? How do you handle this? Starters?
Well, on a beer like this, I've probably made a blonde ale or something like that, or maybe a pale ale. So I'm probably pitching on top of a previous yeast. But if I made one... it's in the fermenter now, so about 3 weeks ago I made one, and I had a new pitch. So I used a 2.5-gallon carboy and made a 2-gallon starter in anticipation of that.
Wow. Just for your double IPA?
Yeah.
Wow.
Right. And so that's the same thing. I do that for lagers all the time.
Now, after you reuse the yeast for a pale ale, what beer are you going to put on top of that yeast bed for this over the top?
So
IPA, I mean. Sorry.
After the IPA?
Yeah.
I'll stop it. Because, I mean, where am I going? Unless I'm doing a barley wine, it doesn't make a lot of sense. So that's usually like the last in the series, sure.
Okay.
Anytime you get, past 5-6% alcohol, and anytime you get past, 30-40 IBUs, it's time to retire that yeast, if you ask me. I think, your step is on the smaller ones, unless you're doing, the same beer over and over again. I think it really does a lot. Hammers the yeast pretty hard in a beer like this.
Now, sometimes what I'll do is I'll know that I want to make another beer after this, and I'll top crop the yeast off of the off of the current batch. Well, I don't care what it is, and then I'll make a starter with that. So it'll be a starter of like maybe a gallon starter with a couple of big scoops, big spoon scoops, your brewing spoon scoops, to sanitize the top crop, and. Makes a great starter. You've never seen a starter take off so fast as when you take.
And you're just taking like
yeast.
A tablespoon or two.
I use my brewing. A brewing spoon, a big, scoop. It's it's probably a
stainless
almost
steel.
A half an ounce per spoon or something like that.
And how do you keep that sterile, transferring from your fermenter into your starter? I mean, are you just taking?
Well,
there
I'm using some. Yeah, it's all together there. So I've got a sanitized container and I've got covered up and.
Okay.
Open up the fermenter and sneak the sanitized spoon in there and.
Right.
Sure, there's a chance, but.
Well, you've got so much yeast anyways. So.
Well, and if you go back to a starter and you're, below 1040 and, no IBUs, it gives the yeast and you plenty of oxygen and nutrients. It gives the yeast a chance to spring off some offspring that, can do all right. As long as you have no mutants going on.
Yeah, right.
It could be recover that yeast and start right back up again.
Now, are you doing that multiple times, top cropping, batch to batch, or do you have an end point?
Well, it depends on the brewing schedule, I'm trying to make, but I've been known to do that, sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's. I'd rather have a top crop than a vial of new yeast, actually.
Now, you compete a lot with your home brewing now. Do you keep a schedule at all? Or
well,
do
when,
you brew
when
this?
I'm brewing like a number of beers for a competition, you know, like I've got something coming up in October, and I've got like a, at this point, I've just got a list of the beers I want to make.
Okay.
But in the next day or two, I've got to create a schedule that, you know, because I basically run one lager and one ale at a time.
Okay.
Sometimes I'll do two ales. But.
All right, we got some
questions.
Oh, yeah, we got somebody on the phone.
Nice.
Got Carlo. With an IPA
Carlo.
Question.
Third
Don't
place.
Carlo. Carlo's
Carlo
doing
knows
awesome.
IPAs. Carlo's got the bronze, awesome. I think, to show that, didn't
he? Every time he wins, too, I'm like, woo! Carlo, we won!
Congratulations.
How you guys doing?
Great. How are you?
Good, good.
You got a question for the IPA master here?
I actually do, and it's in regards to competition. Congratulations again on that Sam Adams deal. But for the first round, the beer, the IPA that I brewed, it was a tad more bitter than the second beer that I sent in for the second round. And I think it was just much cleaner to the second round. And it ended up bronze, you know, getting a bronze in the second round. And I was just wondering, for American IPAs, do the judges like it really clean, or do they want almost a dirty, bitter edge on it, just the hairs of that? Because I felt personally I liked my first one that had that slightly more bitter edge on it than the super clean one that bronzed in the second round. I was just wondering what you guys thought.
Well, when you're talking clean, are you talking about the ester profile, or are you talking, it sounds like you're talking about the bittering.
Yeah, I think it is much more on the bittering.
Okay,
side.
Okay, so a rougher, harsher bittering?
Yeah, it was the exact same recipe. I think what made the difference was I took a lot of the hops from the bottom of the kettle into the fermenter.
Mm-hmm.
And the second time, I took virtually none of the boiled hops into the fermenter. And I'm thinking that that may have made a difference.
Well, that tends to give you a little more veggie kind of thing going on.
I see.
But generally, for American IPAs, you know, they're looking for a clean fermentation profile. They're looking for a good punchy hop bitterness and a punchy hop aroma and flavor.
Right.
So it can be a little sharper in the bitterness, and that'll actually, you know, in a beer that doesn't have that, you know, later in the flight, you could run into trouble.
Sure.
You know, but if you have a, you know, what you're saying is a cleaner bitterness early on, that can actually do very well for you. So IPA is a really tricky category where your placement in it makes a big difference.
Yeah.
So
just in the lineup,
you know,
itself.
I could see either way actually helping you.
Yeah.
What about region, though, too? I mean, you go to the East Coast and...
Yeah, the East Coast generally they're looking for more of a balanced beer.
Okay.
Well, in the Midwest the, as well, yeah.
Yeah.
Out here, you know, you can have just a blasting. I took a couple bottles of double IPA to the conference and poured it for a few people from elsewhere. I said, they go, that's hoppy. I said, yeah, that's what we consider, you know, like a hoppy beer out in West Coast.
Yeah.
They go, yeah, that's hoppy, all right.
But I like the smooth bitterness. Like George Fix talked about the tasting profiles from first wort hopping, and it's just like a smoother bitter that happened to be preferred by tasting panels.
Yeah, it's
and
nonsense.
I don't know if that was making a difference in that smooth bitter as opposed to more of a harsh bitter, too.
You know, if you try them side by side, you know, and see what you prefer. Yeah, set yourself up a blind triangle where somebody else pours them for you, and then, you know, pick out the one that you like and send that one in. The one that you think, you know, drinks best. Because in the long run, that's really, you know, you should be sending those beers forward.
Right. Well, I rebrewed it because I figured with IPA it should be as fresh as possible for the second round.
Doesn't hurt.
Yeah. All right, you guys. Well, thank you.
Thanks, Carla.
All right, have a good night.
I think that's a pretty valid point. I mean, if you're brewing an IPA, if you're into home brewing competitions, definitely having a fresh beer, fresh hop flavor, aroma coming through is definitely important, I think, from a judging standpoint. I mean, you don't want a six-month-old IPA. I mean,
oh, no, fresher the better. Sure.
Right. All right, so we've got some questions from the chat room.
Yes, sir. Few for Mike McDowell here, the man. People want to know your hop back that you mentioned, the actual device. Are you using a B3 hop back? Because they can see that, or is it a different?
No, the what I'm using is a it's like a hotback that I had welded at B3 actually.
Okay.
It's a use a vessel called a Bain Marie, B-A-I-N, Marie as in Marie, and you get them at restaurants, supply houses, and just a cylindrical canister, and you get it with the lid, and then you have to make your own gasket, and you have to have a fitting welded at the bottom, you know, just, you know, so, and you, again, you've got a false bottom, a kind of thing you've built for it. Then it has like a entry point at the top, and then you, you know, I had to build like a clamping mechanism for the lid, but basically it's an airtight system. So, you know, 10 minutes prior to flame out, I recirculate wort through this whole hot back, you know, to sterilize it and that kind of thing. And then once I've done that, then I, you know, I add the hop sack full of hops, about 4 ounces, and this one I'm using is about a quart and a half, I believe.
So you have a good sized sack for that, huh?
Yeah, it's a good sized sack. I've always been proud of my large hop sacks. Yeah. And so, you know, what it does for me is it adds a hop flavor, filters a lot of things I don't want in my ferment out. I don't know if they're that significant or not, but I do believe that it helps in that area too.
Does it does it filter for you?
When I take this hop sack out of there, it's like a solid. It's pulled down so tight in the bottom of this thing that the corners are completely angled.
When you were young.
Yes. All right. What's the next question?
People want to know what you feel you get out of the carapils that you put in this recipe.
Well, I'm looking for like a body kind of thing, against a little more sweetness to counterbalance the big hop bill that I have there.
Okay. You mentioned you dry hop at about when you see 15 seconds between the bubbles. Is there on this beer, is there a rough gravity that people are shooting for?
Well, this beer probably starts out at 1068 or something like that. Your results will vary based on your efficiency, but the beer, I'm probably down to like 1018 or something like that. I'm looking for 1017, 1016 when I knock it out.
Okay. This one you might not be able to do quick, but try. You talked about when you recirculate during the mash about how it changes the color. Right. Why do you think that it does that?
Well, yeah, I think there's sort of like a teabag effect because, you know, if you just leave your teabag sit in your tea, it's going to be, you know,
when you're
be
teabagging,
fairly dark. You know,
yeah.
You know, yeah, Jimmy Mills on this. What is that? Yeah, well, that's a whole other show. And so, I mean, it's just, you know, because of the movement and there's actually, when I recirculate, I probably do it a little bit too aggressively, but it's just my style. There's sort of a pull down of the grain bed, and I think, again, that really emphasizes the T-Mac effect.
Okay. And then, Mr. Jay-Z, last question. What's the difference between the U.S. and the U.K. IPAs according to the BJCP? Like, how the styles differ?
The English IPA is going to be a bit more mellow of beer. So the American IPA is going to be bolder. It's going to use American citrusy hops and piney hops. It's generally a higher alcohol beer, a more bitter beer. And English tends to be a little more malty and mellow and balanced. A little more estery as well. And the American version tends to be a little cleaner. And I guess that's it.
Yeah.
All right, so stay tuned to the Brew Network for details on how to win a trip to the GABF. And listen on Sundays as well.
You'll be there, won't you?
Totally free. Yeah, I'll be at GABF signing books with my buddy Rock Candy and Mike McDowell. He's going to be the long shot winner, I'm predicting.
I get a free ride, baby.
Nice.
Free ride.
And let's see, shirts and the new BN shirts and the... Brewing Classic Styles, or whatever the hell we named it,
book.
Stupid book.
It's available in the Brewing Network store right now. I want you to buy it from the Brewing Network if you can. I know you can get it cheaper elsewhere, all the regular places, but if you buy from the Brewing Network, it helps Justin keep
his
rent. Mics on and things like that. And, you know, it really helps support this show as well. And up next, we're going to talk about English barley wine in our next episode, which is coming up in like 2 minutes.
Perfect.
You got just enough time to recap the recipe. Do it before the voice starts.
80% pale malt, 6% carapils, 6% crystal 60, 3% crystal 120, and 3% Munich malt, a bunch of Chinook, Centennial, Cascade, Centennial, and Chinook hops, California ale yeast mash at 153, maybe 154, ferment around 69 degrees Fahrenheit.
Dry hop on day 7.
Dry hop when God rests. Dry hop and great beer.
There you go.
Brew strong, everybody.
Peace out.
Peace.
The Jameel Show has been a production of the Brewing Network. Please send questions for Jameel to Jameel at the Brewing Network.